Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. I am Bob Inyart, the pastor of Denver Bible Church. It's great to be back from Montana, but what a wonderful trip that was. About 15 guys meeting in a small town in Montana, and we were there to work with some local creationists on a dinosaur dig and to plan the outline, the vision for a documentary on dating dinosaur bones. And boy, was it fun. And there were three scientists there, three degreed scientists. And one was extraordinary. Well, I shouldn't say that. They were all extraordinary. And getting to know them was wonderful. But one was extraordinary in light of current events because he's been in the news. NPR, National Public Radio, has done a segment on him. He's in the middle of the intelligent design turmoil, because he had worked for years at the Smithsonian Institute in Washington, D.C., as a research scientist there, and has been published frequently, and his expertise is in genetics and DNA, and including junk DNA, and identifying how the junk DNA is not junk. Anyway, he had been fired from the Smithsonian because of his work, as had another woman scientist there, because of their move against Darwinism and pointing out that Darwinism, natural selection, that this cannot account for the complexity of DNA, the genome, and how awesomely, awesomely complex it is, and the great intelligence it would have required to design our genetics. So he was fired. He's now working full-time in the intelligent design movement. And I'm not going to give too much personal information about him, or really any, because that wasn't the purpose of our meeting. So I'm not even mentioning his name. But he did come to Christ through his study of science. No one had witnessed to him, but just what he had picked up from the culture over the years, a generically Christian culture, but in studying the cell, the inner workings, microbiology of how a cell functions, he knew that this could not happen by physical laws. There had to be a creator who was awesomely brilliant. And he became a Christian. Praise God for that. He had a son there, 9-year-old son, really fun. And so here's what we talked about. It has to do with the phone call I placed to the curator of the Museum of the Rockies up in Bozeman, Montana, Jack Horner, who is the guy that Steven Spielberg modeled the mad scientist in Jurassic Park. He modeled that character after Jack Horner. And it's sort of funny. It's how life imitates art. In that movie, in those movies, and in Michael Crichton's books, Jurassic Park and the sequels, they thought about getting dinosaur DNA that would still survive and reconstituting it and making dinosaurs. And so lo and behold, it's Jack Horner in his work with MSU, Montana State University, his work there, where they have been digging up these soft tissue T-Rexes, a couple of them now. And in fact, often in Montana, when they dig up dinosaur fossils, they testify that there's a smell. It's like you're in a morgue. It's like it's all just decaying. And so after 65 million years, 70 million years, this stuff should have been mineralized. It should be fossilized. All the organic matter should long ago have decomposed. And it should just be dinosaur fossils in sandstone. But it's not. There's still soft tissue. They're able to rehydrate some of this stuff and get blood vessels and cells, hemoglobin and collagen. It's just astounding. So we met there, and of course, we wanted to address if we're going to make a documentary, and I just have a peripheral role. It's not my documentary, but the producer, the executive producer, is a friend of Bob and Yurt Live, and just thought it'd be fun to have input from a talk show host and a few scientists and other people who have dug dinosaur fossils and so on. And so we talk through what are the objections. And the objections to this kind of research comes from the evolutionist and even from creationist. And they say, well, you have to eliminate contamination. And here's what that all means. And I'll tell you how we're addressing this issue to show people that dinosaur bones are not millions of years old, but they're thousands of years old. Okay, carbon 14 is a certain kind of atom, and carbon 12 is a more normal kind of carbon atom. And all living things have carbon in them, and there's a lot of carbon, regular carbon. There's just a little bit of carbon 14. And carbon 14 doesn't last a long time. It decays, it breaks down. And so let's say you have 100 atoms of carbon 14 inside something living. After about 5,000 years, you only have 50 atoms left. They decompose. They decay is the more accurate term. And after another 5,000 years or so, then you only have 250 atoms left. And after another 5,000 years, you only have 125 atoms. And after another 5,000 years, you only have 63 atoms. And then 5,000 more years, you got 31, and then 15 atoms, and then 8, and then 4, and then 2, and then 1, then they're gone. So they don't last for millions of years. So when you find carbon-14 in something, that either means that that thing was alive, living, in the last thousands of years, or somehow carbon-14 was injected into that thing after it died. Those are the two possibilities. So the atheist and the evolutionist, they say, well, we would never carbon-14 date dinosaur fossils because what's the sense? We know they're 70 million years old, and so there's not going to be any carbon-14 in them. Well, it turns out that whenever you carbon-14 date dinosaur fossils, you always find carbon-14 in them. Always. So then they have to say, oh, well, that's because there's contamination. So when it rains, the rainwater, the groundwater may bring carbon-14 into the fossil, or if the roots of trees or plants grow down into the fossil, maybe those roots bring carbon-14 into it. And so we say, okay, contamination is a valid concern, so let's think it through. And dinosaur fossils, that's one thing to date. There are other things to date. Anything that's supposedly millions of years old, you can date it and see, okay, would there be contamination in here? And is there carbon-14? And so you look at things that really would be almost impervious to groundwater seeping in. So what's the hardest substance known to man that you'd find in nature that water would not seep into? What could you think of that's supposedly millions of years old? Is it, what would it be? A corn husk? No. What? Anybody? I'm looking at the studio audience. Diamonds. Al Sharon, our office manager, got it. Diamonds. Diamonds are hard. They're made out of carbon. And the purity of a diamond, you know how they rate diamonds, so many carats and all? That has to do with whether or not there are impurities in it. So a diamond of high quality, no impurities, no breaks in it, water is not going to seep into that diamond. Plus, you could look in places where, as far as our geologists say, there has been no groundwater at these various levels for X number of millions of years, according to their geological false timescale. But so you find diamonds that are supposedly millions of years old. You break them up in a laboratory. You take a part of the diamond from the inside of the diamond and you carbon-14 date it, and we find it has carbon-14 in it, which means it's not millions of years old, like we're told. And then you get oil. You drill down and you get oil that is thousands of feet under the surface of the earth, far below any known groundwater. You get oil, you bring it up, it's supposed to be millions of years old. You date that, you get carbon 14. So you get coal, and you date coal, and you get carbon 14. You date amber. You know what amber is? Tree sap that's fossilized. So there are bugs inside amber, bugs and seeds and pollen. And everything you'd find around the base of a tree, everything small that could get caught in the sap and then covered, that's what you find in amber. And so you carbon 14 date those bugs and those seeds and that pollen and the amber itself. And amber is pretty hard. Water doesn't seep into amber. It's like a marble. And you get carbon 14 in amber. And not only that, but the bugs in the amber, they're identical to the bugs today. And they say, oh, this is 70 million year old amber, but the bugs are all identical. In fact, you know the pine beetle that's destroying, it's destroying the trees in Colorado and up north into Wyoming and western Montana? Well, one scientist was looking at a chunk of amber, and he looked and he saw, there's the pine beetle. It's in there. We got a pine beetle in this amber. That's the thing that's wiping out our trees by the millions. Isn't it funny? It didn't evolve after 70 million years. It's right there. And not only that, even the behavior. I was watching public television, Corporation for Public Broadcasting, one of their specials. I think it was a Nova special on amber a few months ago. And the scientist, the evolutionary scientist, pointed out that in one chunk of amber, there's an entire world in there of things to learn. And there are so many insects in this one piece of amber, and they're all identical to all the same insects today, like the ants and so on. And furthermore, because of their position and what they were doing when they were trapped, and they were preserved so perfectly, they could tell their behavior. They could tell what they were doing when they were trapped. And they said it's uncanny because the behavior is identical to those insects today. So not only in 70 million years did the insects not change, but their behavior didn't change either. Isn't that funny? So you could carbon 14 date amber and the insects in them and the plant matter in them, the biomass, and you get carbon 14, which says it's not millions of years old. It's only thousands of years old. And also gas, natural gas, and different kinds of gas that they put drills down into the surface of the earth. They'll go down 10,000 feet. And the gas is under pressure. There's no groundwater down there. It's pressurized gas. They take it up. They sample it. And they test it for carbon-14. And what do they find? Carbon-14. And they say, this gas is 32 million years old. How do you know that? Oh, we smelled it. Doesn't it smell old? Oh. Smells old. That's old gas. But it turns out carbon-14 atoms would not survive for 30 million years. So it's not that old. It's only thousands of years old. So everywhere we look, we find carbon-14, where the evolutionists would expect, on their claim that the Earth is billions of years old, and these things are all millions or even 100 million years old, that they should have no carbon-14 in them. That's what the atheistic worldview would expect. What the young Earth creationist worldview expects is we'll find carbon-14 everywhere we look for it. And that's what we find. Now, regarding dinosaur fossils. So when we carbon-14 date dinosaur fossils, and that's been done many times now by creationist scientists, they find carbon-14 in every dinosaur fossil they date. They find carbon-14. So the atheist says, well, that's from contamination. And we say, well, wait a minute. There's no contamination in these diamonds we tested. No contamination in the amber. No contamination in the gas. We take this coal from coal seams where there's no groundwater for hundreds of thousands of years, we find carbon 14. And we get it in oil. And so why do you insist that all the carbon 14 we find in dinosaur fossils is from contamination? So that's the argument we make. By the way, the phone number here is 1-800-8-NYART, 1-800-836-9278. In a moment, I'm going to tell you about a letter we received today from a couple in California who put us in their will, their last will and testament. That's extraordinary. It's humbling. It's shocking. We're so thankful. So we'll tell you guys about that in a moment. But we also made some other arguments regarding fossils of dinosaurs that have carbon 14 in them. For example, in Montana, now it's increasingly common to find biological molecules that have not decomposed and they have not mineralized. They're still biological. And so you find collagen. And in the Wankel T-Rex they found up at MSU, Montana State University, Jack Horner and Mary Schweitzer, and in the soft tissue T-Rex they found in 2005, where they're finding not only just organic molecules, but entire structures that are identifiable. Wow, those are blood vessels. Wow, those are red blood cells. Wow, there's collagen. Wow, there's tendons or sinews connecting these tissues. And they're still flexible. It's startling. So our argument is that those fossils were obviously protected. They were very well protected from their environment. They were as though they were sealed inside a femur bone. And why do we say as though they were sealed? Well, because if they were open to groundwater, then groundwater brings with it minerals. And so the soft tissue would gradually mineralize in water. You know, when something gets wet and then dry, and wet and dry, it tends to decompose. Water is the enemy if you're worried about decomposition, right? If you always leave water on your kitchen counters and wet cloths and wet sponges on the bottom of your kitchen sink, then you pick up your wet sponge that's been on the bottom of your kitchen sink for 2 days and you smell it and you go, "Whew, that stinks." Why does it stink? Because you have cultured, you have grown about 3 million bacterium on that sponge. So you throw it in the wash with some bleach or you put it in the microwave and kill them, then it smells okay. So water leads to decomposition. It breaks things down. Water is the enemy if you want to preserve things. And so it's obvious if we have fossils that have been buried for thousands of years, T-Rex dinosaur fossils, that groundwater was not seeping in and out and drying and evaporating out and dehydrating out of these fossils. They were protected very well from their environment because they still have soft tissue structures. So some of the best dinosaur fossils in the world to carbon 14 date are the ones that have soft tissue in them, because you know they were protected from decomposition that comes along with groundwater seeping in. So, and scientists typically, they document the condition of the fossil as they're digging it out. And if you have a femur bone that's intact, it's in the ground, and inside the femur is amazingly well preserved, well, then that's fabulous evidence that you haven't had a lot of groundwater contamination. And then you go to geologists and you ask, okay, where were certain dinosaur fossils dug up? Were they in areas that we haven't had groundwater for eons of time? And if so, they're also good to test. And so that's the idea, that the preponderance of the evidence is if the old Earth view was correct, then wherever we carbon 14 date these specimens, we should find no carbon 14. if the young earth worldview is correct, we should find carbon 14 in everything we date. And we do. Anything that had carbon in it. You don't carbon 14 date a piece of granite. You don't do that. But living things that are now dead and things that were made out of living things, like coal is made from plant matter. And so you test coal and lo and behold, it's got carbon 14 all over the place. Okay. So our phone number, 1-800-8-NYARDS, 1-800-836-9278. Now, next week, we have an interview set up with the curator of the Creation Museum. Oh, you think I mean maybe Ken Ham in Kentucky? No. This is a Creation Museum in Montana. And let me tell you, it's tremendous. And we've been thinking for the last couple of years about Answers in Genesis and their Creation Museum, and that's exciting. That's a world-class museum, just tremendous. But it turns out in Montana, eastern Montana, right off the freeway, that there's a Creation Museum being built, a dinosaur fossil creation museum, and it's tremendous. And that's only 11 hours away from Denver. So undoubtedly, we will be bringing people up there when it opens in 2008, Lord willing. That's their projected opening time frame. And we got a tour through it. And in fact, the curator was with us on the dinosaur dig. And we'll be interviewing the curator about his museum and his opportunities for creationists and others to get involved in actual fossil digs. Paleontologists go in and dig up the really old stuff. That's what they say. But as it turns out, the really old stuff is not any older than the human civilizations that have existed through the last few thousand years. Okay. So again, our phone number, 1-800-8-NYARDS. That's 1-800-836-9278. Now, we got a letter from a couple who live in California, and I'm not even going to give the name of their town or their names, not even their first names, but it's just so humbling and what an honor. And they write, "Dear Bob, here is a copy of our last will and testament." Actually, there's two, one for the husband, one for the wife. And they go into, well, let's see, their wills were written in October, and they write, "Those who live in Denver and go to Denver Bible Church are blessed. We can't find a strong Bible church like you guys have in Denver, and we have been blessed since 1995 to learn from Bob and Yurt Live about the Word of God rightly divided. Studying God's word with you has changed our relationship with the Lord. Thanks so much. With love." And then they sign it. What a wonderful letter. It's very humbling. It's extraordinary. And I don't know that Bob and Yurt Live will be around long enough to collect on somebody's will, right? We don't know how long this ministry will last. And this ministry is a month-to-month ministry paying our bills. And so if you like what we do and you want to encourage us and to help us continue to press on to reach more people, please consider helping us. Our phone number, 1-800-8-NYARDS. That's 1-800-836-9278. And our website, you could donate. You could look at our materials. In fact, just this week now, we have some of our Bible study albums available as downloadable MP3s. So you could get them on MP3 CDs that we mail to you, or you could buy an album like The Plot, Overview of the Whole Bible, or The Tree of the Knowledge of Good and Evil, How to Live the Christian Life. You can get those. We'll mail them to you on a CD, or you could just download the MP3s. Or, of course, you could do both. So let's go to the phones real quick in Aurora. Vic, welcome to Bob and Yurt Live.
Hi, Bob. How are you?
Great.
You know, I was wondering, didn't you guys have like a first Friday of the month PM meeting somewhere for like Rocky Mountain Creation, something or other?
That's right. Rocky Mountain Creation Fellowship has a wonderful meeting each month. And let me see, I'm Googling them right now. I should remember their website. I think they have a youngearth.com website or something like that. But they, Rocky Mountain Creation Fellowship started, their very first meeting was in my living room, it's an honor to say, with five of us. And it's been a wonderful ministry ever since that night, with over 100 people typically attending. Youngearth.org is their website. And they have some extraordinary events coming up in September. Absolutely extraordinary. About meetings about the age of the earth and projects and experiments conducted by scientists that they'll blow your mind, Vic.
Oh, cool. So youngearth.org will get all that meeting information and
yeah,
all that?
Yeah, that's right.
Okay. Also, specifically, I was wondering, do you have any teaching materials that one could use with regard to the creation of the young earth stuff that could be used like third through fifth graders?
Oh, third through fifth graders.
Yeah.
Well, we have a couple things. I know many families that homeschool their kids with Walt Brown's book In the Beginning.
Right.
And that has tremendous material that kids can absorb real well because he's a teacher at heart.
I like that because you can read his stuff on the internet. That's cool.
You can. His entire book is available at his website, at Walt Brown's website. Just Google his name. Or you could buy his hardcover, you know, full-length book for kids or adults with plenty of color photos and maps and diagrams. It's just a great book, In the Beginning by Walt Brown. And also, we have two other things. We have a CD called Walt Brown Week, where Walt Brown was on the show for a week, and that CD has other resources. It's jam-packed with neat resources. And then we have a CD called The Age of the Earth Debate, where I got to debate a couple old earth scientists in Denver, including a geophysicist. And that was a wonderful 2.5 hour debate. And that's packed with resources also.
Awesome, Bob. Appreciate it. Keep up the good work.
Thank
friend.
You, Vic. May God bless you.
Bye-bye.
Okay. Appreciate that. And I want to let everybody know Colorado Right to Life's banquet is coming up. It's September 22nd. And this banquet is such an important event. If there is any way that you can be there, please, here's what we would love. If you could go to the banquet, Phil Klein is going to be the speaker. He is the former Kansas Attorney General who put his career on the line to stop America's most notorious late-term abortionist, George Tiller. And thanks to Phil Klein, George Tiller was indicted on 19 criminal counts of committing illegal abortions in Kansas just, 10 days ago or so? And so Phil Klein is the speaker at our banquet coming up, and that's going to be extraordinary, September 22nd, a Saturday night. Now, it's only $60 for a ticket for the banquet. Tables for 10 people are $600. So if you can come, please call Colorado Right to Life directly or us if you want to be at a Bob and Your Live table. But especially, maybe you could host the table with 9 of your friends. So call us, 800-8-NYART. That's 1-800-836-9278. And Maranatha Christian Center, what a great school, Maranatha.